This is the Vorpal Network.
Welcome to the Dice Monkey Dice Cast. This is episode one, and I'm your host, Mark Meredith. And this week, joining me is Jeff Greiner from The Tome Show.
Here I am. Yay!
Now, the Dice Monkey Dice Cast is going to be a monthly podcast where we're going to discuss things about D&D and other role-playing games. And we're actually being hosted by The Tome Show. So if you already have The Tome Show feed, you'll find us there.
But so it'll be sort of a, if I can sort of talk through the concept a little bit, people shouldn't be used to hearing my voice here. I'm just sort of here because it's the first episode, right? And so add a little familiarity to people who are already subscribed to the feed. But this is going to be Mark's show, and he's going to do his thing, and I'm mostly going to stay out of the way. Except for the rare occasions that he decides to have me on, but we're going to release it through the Tome Show's feed. It's going to be, I guess we'll call it a Tome Show production, right? It'll be
exactly
in the Tome Show's feed. It'll be, you know, in conjunction with it, with what we're doing, but it's sort of a show within a show, right? We're hands off and letting Mark sort of run with his own game and do his own thing. So yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, and each episode I'll have a different guest host, probably cycle back through people that were especially appreciated by other gamers, and so that's the plan for the show. It's a pretty straightforward layout. We're going to do the news, and then we're going to do a little bit of advice, and then I would ideally in the future really like to do a advice column where people can either call in or send an email that sort of is asking for advice about their campaign, and then me and the guest host can talk about that. But this time we're just going to talk about the news. We're going to talk about our topic, which is going to be prophecy. And then we're going to close that up by talking about what games we're currently involved in.
And just to understand the format real clearly here, three segments, about what length are you looking at?
We're looking probably about, hopefully, an hour-long podcast. It may end up going a few minutes past that. It may go a few minutes earlier, but we're probably going to be looking at about an hour-long podcast.
Right on. That's always good for people to sort of understand what they can expect. And of course, you're an experienced podcaster. This isn't your
yes.
first show.
Yes, I'm actually the one of the hosts on the RPG Circus, which you can find at rpgcircus.com. And we talk about three topics each time, sort of a three-ring circus, and we talk about everything. Not all the guys are interested in D&D, so we talk about a lot of different role-playing games. Also, I've been a guest host on a few other podcasts, like Enrique's Newbie DM Minicast, and then also I've been on The Tome Show before. Mm-hmm. And I've also been on the Reckless Dice Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay podcast.
Right on. So what that means when I listen to the concept of your experience combined with your format idea, that tells me that you're probably hitting in a place of realism, you know, whereas most podcasters will start off with, I'm going to do a real concise, you know, 15, 20 minute, 30 minute thing. Right. And then it's going to be in and out and quick because there's plenty of long shows. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And then over time, all of those podcasters end up turning into hour-long podcasters because you just keep wanting to do more and more things, or you fall in love with the sound of your own voice or whatever. Mm. And so I find that a lot of new podcasters start off with this idea of this is going to be the format, and then it changes and gets longer over time.
Oh,
when
yeah.
you've been around the block a few times, so when you say it's going to be about an hour-long show, I'm probably going to believe that it's going to be about an hour-long show.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm going to try to keep it to that. So if we end up dragging on too long, then I'll just do some editing to get us down to approximately an hour. So you can expect that if you got an hour-long commute, then you should be able to listen to it in one sitting, or half-hour commute, you should be able to listen to it there and back from work. Also, the name, the Dice Monkey Dice Cast, if you have not seen dicemonkey.net, that's my blog, and I pretty much talk about anything, which is sort of the inspiration for this podcast, in that I don't really have too much of a focus. Occasionally I'll have series where I talk about things, but really it's just sort of talking about whatever it is that I'm thinking about at the moment. So that's usually where I'm going to find my topics for each week, is based purely on what exactly it is that's interesting to me or entertaining me at the moment. And so that's the plan.
And to continue the pimping of projects, this isn't even the first time you and I have collaborated on a project before.
That's true.
Because we are both co-founders of dndanddads.com, where mm-hmm. where it's just open for anybody who's a gamer and a dad to, if you want to have a place to blog about whatever, then you can go there and do it. It's more of a service to us as a chance to sort of vent and air and ask for advice and whatever. And so it gets used on occasion, and sometimes it just sits for a few weeks and doesn't do much. But it's just whenever something inspires one of our dads to say something, we do.
Absolutely. And then you've got the Tome Show, naturally, and then you also have another blog that you run.
I do. I run temporaryhitpoints.com.
And the focus of that is what?
It is a website for 4th edition D&D players. I basically saw that there were lots and lots and lots and lots of blogs focused on DM advice or just general, right? Mm-hmm. But there was nothing focused specifically on players. And it occurred to me, in theory, there's 4 or 5 times as many players as there are DMs. Mm-hmm. You know, and while maybe the DMs need a little bit of extra help because they have a lot more to prep and to do and whatever, there should be something out there for players. So I saw a niche, and I thought I'd try to scratch that niche. Did that?
No, okay. Not quite. We'll get there. Yeah. Excellent. So let's move on to the news. So the first piece of news is Gardmore Abbey. The Madness at Gardmore Abbey is coming out, and that's from Wizards of the Coast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thrilling, heroic tier adventure for characters from levels 6 to 10. Gardmore Abbey was first mentioned in the DMG. It was a abbey where strange things had happened. It had been assaulted by forces of evil, and because there was some artifact there, and that was all the details it gave.
But now we know more.
Exactly.
And it's not just some artifact. It's one of my favorite artifacts of all time.
Yes.
Through the editions. It is I guess it's not the return of the Deck of Many Things, but it is the Deck of Many Things. We had a version of the Deck of Many Things about a year or so ago, didn't we? Mm-hmm.
I think so, yeah.
On DDI.
Yeah. But this is actually going to be a physical Deck of Many Things, which is very, very exciting. It's going to be a deck of 24 cards, 22 cards representing the Deck of Many Things, and then 2 treasure cards. It's going to have 4 32-page books. So it's going to talk all about Gardmore Abbey, monsters, quests, encounters. From what I've heard, it's much more like a sort of a guide to running it. It's not a specific adventure with do this, then this, then this. It's more...
A little more sandboxy?
Yeah, a little more sandboxy, which is interesting, especially for a location as small as the Abbey. And it's going to have...
And as I understand, there's also a lot of intrigue and politics, which is hard to pull off in such a small location. But there's different factions, and each faction has leaders that are influenced by the fact that they're holding a card from the Deck of Many Things. So it plays into this larger story of the artifact. It's not one of the hardbound deluxe adventures. What do they call those? Super adventures.
Yes.
But they're calling this a deluxe adventure where it's a box set full of, you know, the different books and different maps and all these little tokens and pieces and things that go along with it. So
the books will be much more like the Shadowfell set or the Monster Vault set that are paperback, but you're going to have 4 of them instead of the one big hardback like Revenge of the Giants. It's also going to have monster tokens and also some dungeon tiles, which I think is pretty cool that they're going to have. Mm-hmm. Dungeon tiles specific to the adventure. I'd love to see them do more of that.
Yeah, the whole concept of the thing in my mind harkens back not to something we haven't seen since second edition, right? It was second edition that we had adventures in a box.
Yeah.
With like what's the one I'm thinking of? Dragon Mountain, mm-hmm. Under Mountain. They all had mountains in them, didn't they?
White Plume Mountain.
White Plume Mountain, yeah. But you know, you had these boxes where you'd pull them out, and it had the full maps, and it had, you know, some of them had tokens, or it had handouts with you know, visual aids and stuff on it. You know, and it had multiple books of, you know, just sort of getting to know the environment, and then this book is the actual adventure, and you know, so there's lots of different things going on with it. And I'm interested to see how this one plays out.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I've noticed with the hardbacks, I think that the purpose, I imagine, yes, they're doing it so that they have lots of interesting and varied things for players to do. But I imagine that a large part of their choice to go with boxes of adventures and stuff is to sort of cut down on piracy, because you're not going to be able to pirate as easily the monster tokens and dungeon tiles or the Deck of Many Things as somebody just scanning at a bunch of copies of the books.
I guess I'm a little less cynical.
Yeah.
I sort of said in my head, I think they probably had an idea for a cool adventure,
mm-hmm.
and thought, what's the best format for releasing it? And I mean, you couldn't really do this as a book because it's got all these little things to it. Right? They wanted to have a whole adventure ready to go in a box, which is a good idea, you know. So
yeah, absolutely. I haven't picked up the Shadowfell box set yet, but I'm really looking forward to doing that because eventually my players are going to end up there. So
as long as you know what to expect. I was disappointed by the Shadowfell box because I wanted to have a resource that was about the Shadowfell. And it's not that. It's a campaign setting in a specific city in the Shadowfell.
Oh, okay. So that is actually good to know.
Right. It's more akin to the Neverwinter book that just came out a little while ago than it is to, Plane Below. You know, it's not going to show you how to have adventures necessarily in the Shadowfell. It's going to give you a specific location the Shadowfell will play with. So
there isn't much detail on the Domains of Dread, aka Ravenloft.
No. Well, I think there's maybe a sidebar that mentions it. But.
Oh, okay. Secondly, Mordenkainen's Magnificent Emporium is coming out.
This is from the dead.
Yes, it had been canceled back in February, I believe. Said that it wasn't going to be coming out. That it was just going to be a bunch of articles on DDI, and they decided that they were still going to come out with it, but they've done an interesting thing in that you can't buy it on Amazon. You can only buy it in retail stores, which is a really interesting choice because I imagine they get a lot of business through Amazon, and this is basically them saying, no, we want to make sure that the FLGS is still going to be supported. And so you can't get it on Amazon. You can only get it currently at the local game stores. It and the Madness of Gardmore Abbey, their official release date is September 20th. We're actually recording this on September 11th, which means that the Premier stores should actually already have this in store. I've seen a couple of guys online who have already gotten it. Now, have you looked over the different articles they've released?
I've looked over a few of them, yeah. I'm always hard pressed for time to read a lot of the stuff that comes out, and so usually preview articles and stuff, I end up skimming more than I read thoroughly, just because I know I'm going to do a review of it later, and I know if I'm going to review it, I'm going to want to actually read it, not just skim through the preview articles. So, you know, I'm not making a decision whether or not to get it. I know I'm going to get it, and I'll figure out all the details when I actually do, as opposed to having to skim through the previews on the way, you know?
Yeah. They've got Hirelings and Henchmen in this set, which was actually surprising to a lot of people. They weren't expecting that. It's really interesting. They have, you can hire hirelings at different levels. And, for example, one of the guys here, his AC is his level plus 14. So it's, you determine what level the hireling is. They're going to cost different based on what level they are. And then you can sort of add in different traits to them. Like, you can give your hireling a torch, which is an aura 5. Or you can make your hireling a sage, which makes them 3 times the cost. And allows them to make all kinds of different roles for arcana and dungeoneering, history, nature, religion. Things like that. And then they actually have henchmen who are, they're named characters that have different abilities. They have, for example, here, Gesh, a mercenary captain, who's a dragonborn, who's got a couple of different interesting abilities. So I think that was actually really cool. They're also introducing curses. So they have Necklace of Strangulation, Periapt, a Foul Rotting, different... I'm really interested to see how the cursed magical items are going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is... these are filling in some things that have been in previous editions that I think people were anxious to see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at least in some of these cases, I mean, some of the blogging community stuff has tried to fill in some of those gaps, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, At Will did a great series on for a while back now on using cursed items and how to develop them for 4th edition, because that's something that wasn't really there. And, you know, what, a year, maybe 2 years after At Will was figuring it out, Wizards of the Coast and they figured it out pretty well. Wizards of the Coast is now getting on board and deciding, okay, this is apparently something people want. Henchmen and that kind of stuff, hirelings. I believe there was a DDI article that first introduced the concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was trying to look through my PDFs here real quick to see if I could find it, and I don't see it off the top. Oh, no, there it is. 397.
Issue 397 of Dragon?
That would be Dragon with that number, wouldn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. there's an Unearthed Arcana article by Rob Schwab about henchmen and hirelings.
Okay.
That sort of gives some of those same same basic rules, I think, that we're going to see in Mordenkainen. In fact, I suspect what happened was this article was put together and released after Mordenkainen was canceled.
Yeah.
And so this was one of the things that was turned into one of the articles releasing some of that content.
Mm-hmm.
That now the book's back, and so hopefully it's not just a rehash of the same thing, but it's giving us even more.
Yeah, absolutely. They've also got really great article on armor, or a section in their preview on armor. They're going to be introducing banded mail, barbed shields, full plate, ring mail, spiked plate, split mail, and studded leather. They're just more variations on the different type of armor you can find. So I'm really looking forward to allowing the players to have more variety in what type of armor they're wearing instead of just a simple, well, I'm wearing leather. Yeah, I'm wearing leather too. Instead, you have one guy in leather, another guy in studded leather. They have full plate, which is heavy, heavy, heavy armor. It's more than just plate armor. So that's going to be pretty cool to see.
There's a reason that knights rode horses.
Yeah, if you go with the full plate, it's a +8 armor bonus, and it has the tough property, which means that it's the first time in an encounter a critical hit is scored against you, it's just a normal hit.
It's sort of like the old third edition, was that Fortified?
Yes.
It was a magical property that did something similar.
Mm-hmm. There's also a few other new properties. Barbed, basically people take damage if you grab them. Durable. The first time you take damage, you reduce the damage equal to the amount of the durability rating. So it just sort of adds on a damage reduction to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like those are the three, tough, durable, and barbed. So that's pretty cool because they actually have a spiked plate now as well.
Right. So now you can play, what was it, the guy from the Driss novels.
Yeah.
the Battle Rager dwarf, you know, that just had the spiked armor, and his weapon was he would just throw himself at his enemies.
Yeah, exactly. So it looks like it's going to be a fascinating little book. Now, I'm kind of OCD about my D&D books, and I have them arranged on my shelf color-coded. So I'm really excited to see that Mordenkainen looks like it's got the same edging as the Adventurer's Vault, so it can go next to my Vault. Because
that's really where it belongs. That's really what it is.
It's an advanced Adventurer's Vault with actually much more story detail to all the magical items. They don't just have lists of magical items. There's actually details as to what the different things are.
Which seems to be a theme for Wizards of the Coast lately anyway, is that they seem to have gotten the impression that people just don't just want books full of crunch, and they're trying to do a good amount of fluff. In fact, I'd say they're probably doing more fluff than crunch these days. Now, in a book like this, it may be closer to 50-50 or even skew the other way. But still, they're trying really hard to add more story elements to what they write, and I don't think that's all bad.
Yeah, I got the Adventurer's Vault, the Threats to Nentir Vale, and loved the story elements behind that. So it looks like it's going to be a really great product, and I look forward to picking it up.
Cool. Any other D&D news?
Those are the two big ones right now.
Have you gotten in on the Heroes of Neverwinter?
I have. I actually
Facebook game.
I was one of the first people on there. One of the people who didn't need a code to get in. They were every couple hours. They were unlocking a few more spots, and I happened to get in. And I currently have a fourth level hero, who's a human cleric, and he's been doing pretty well for himself. And I've got a bunch of other friends. A lot of the different bloggers are all on there. And so I've been using their heroes as part of my adventuring party. It's a really fun game. It does not feel like a Facebook game.
Cool.
So if you get the chance to get on there, you definitely should.
I got in on it. I got in not twice. I got in on it the first time, and because they posted one of those things every few hours, and I got in. It was great, and you know, whatever. Yay, I finally get to check it out. And then it wouldn't load. Makes sense. It's in beta, right? So they're going to have problems. So it's like, I got in, and then it wouldn't load. And then when I came back later, it said I had never got in.
Oh.
So I had to wait until for another opportunity, and then I finally got in. And I basically played through the introduction, I guess.
Yeah.
And I haven't played much more since, because I'm very busy.
Yeah. It plays just like you're playing a game of D&D, so it works pretty well. They've gotten rid of daily powers, so it's just encounter powers. But it does require a lot of strategy to figure out exactly when you're going to be using what powers, and especially as a cleric trying to get all your powers right so that you aren't you aren't wasting all of your healing spells and not able to heal your guys at the end of a fight. Right. So it's fun.
Right on.
All right, so now we're going to stop for a break, and we're going to have a commercial from Noble Knight Games, our sponsor.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
And welcome back. We're going to move right into our topic, which is using prophecies in your game. Now, just before we start recording, Jeff, you said that recently you've actually used a lot of prophecies in your game.
Yeah. What happened is I've been running a 1 to 30 campaign that started like 2-3 weeks after 4th edition came out.
Okay.
And they entered the epic tier several months back now. And when they did so, I wanted to try to make epic destinies important. As they got into their epic destinies, I decided, you know, this is the story. You know, epic destinies are supposed to tell the story of how your character exits the stage, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and are, you know, sort of your ultimate fate, if you will. And so, I wanted to make them important. And so, I had everybody sort of talk to me as they were leveling up to epic tier, what their epic destiny was, and you know, I wanted to make sure I could fit it into the storyline that we were telling and make them important and all that. One of my characters, who is a ranger, archer ranger, who is our damage output fountain, if you will. He finally found an epic destiny that would work. He's a real mechanical guy, so he wanted to make sure that it was going to fit well mechanically.
Okay.
And I wanted to make sure it was going to fit well story. And at one point, he actually created his own epic destiny, which I then vetoed for reasons you could probably guess.
Yeah.
So I eventually helped him find an epic destiny that would work called Punisher of the Gods that we were both happy with. And the idea,
where's that one from?
Oh, I don't know. I found it through the compendium, so I don't know where it's from. Okay. Off the top of my head.
I think I've actually seen that one in print.
Yeah. It sounds like something that might be, like a divine power sort of thing, but the idea is this. It's not that you're going out and punishing the gods. It's that the gods in general have made you somebody who's going to go around and punish people for them. Right? Okay. So you're no longer working for a god. You're working for the gods.
Nice.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so what I did is that and so that happened. He became a punisher of the gods. And then a few levels later, there was we had finished the Tomb of Horrors, the 4th edition Tomb of Horrors, and they killed a Sarak. Right, it was all over. It was all done with. They had that ultimate conclusion of that part of the storyline, and I tied it into some of the larger storyline as well. And there was this big sort of magical explosion thing when he died, and when the light, you know, when their vision clears and they can see again, this Punisher of the Gods character saw tattoos of names all over his body, most of which had lines across them, but on his forearm, there were 10 names, and the first one was a Sarak that was now crossed off, but the other 9 are not crossed off. The implication being that these are all people that he's killed, except for these 9, which are all people that he's going to kill. This is his hit list given to him by the gods. And to make things really interesting, like, you know, we're playing in the Forgotten Realms, and the first one on the list, the first name on the list that was not crossed off is Mistra, the goddess of magic, who supposedly is already dead.
Yeah.
You know, the last name on the list is one of the other PCs, right? Huh. And then there's other names sort of along the way. One of which isn't even a person. It's the name of an ancient city that's also supposedly already in ruins and dead.
That's really cool.
So that's sort of how I'm playing around with that. You know, and I managed to sort of, you know, there were 10 names and they killed the first one at level 21, so there's basically a name per level.
Okay.
So once per level, I have to find a way to sort of squeeze in him killing one of the people on these on this list.
Now, have you figured out why it is Mystra and that city are on the list, or are you just winging it?
No, I have a pretty good idea. Everybody that I put on the list, I had a pretty good idea of why they were there. The larger story of the campaign is that they are trying to stop Zaztam, the ruler of Thay, the lich ruler of Thay, from becoming an overgod. Mm-hmm. And along the way, they're also trying to bring back Mystra to have another goddess of magic so people like Zaztam couldn't pull off these little tricks anymore. Right? Yeah. There'd be somebody there to sort of control all of that. So I knew along the whole route sort of where I'm going and how I'm getting there. You know, I know that, you know, Zaztam, for example, is number 9 on the list, right? So because I know that's going to be like sort of the ultimate climax. And then the other things that I added to the list were things that I've been over the last 20-some levels, I've been laying in the groundwork of. These are sort of the allies that you might encounter along the way to going up to Zaztam, or, you know, as they're collecting bits of Mystra that have been left behind and scattered throughout the world, you know, that city is a city that I thought could be connected to that hunt for bits of Mystra.
Okay.
Mystra's name actually being on the list was because, and they've already seen this, so I'm not spoiling anything for any of them that might be listening, is that because there was an aspect of Mystra that was having a conversation with an aspect of, I think it was Ogma is who I had him talking to, right? So two gods of the realms were having a conversation through their aspects in a temple that got stuck in a time loop when the spell plague happened.
Oh, okay.
And so that aspect continued to exist because it's in this time loop. It's sort of in this time bubble and never died. And the time loop constantly ended with that aspect exploding and forcing everything back into the time loop again. And so they had to actually adventure through the temple to get to her. Meanwhile, the temple kept resetting. So they'd keep running into the same people that had never seen them before. And so then, yeah, eventually they had to kill her, of course, to stop the time loops, which fulfilled.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. That's really cool.
Yeah, so far. They've only got crossed, two or three names off the list. So
yeah.
We'll see if it keeps working.
That's excellent. The way that I've been doing prophecy is my players are actually first level. They just made second level at the end of the third session. And my idea when I started my campaign was just sort of to see if I could pull off an epic feeling to a game at first level. Mm-hmm. Rather than having players running around having to save a princess from a band of goblins, I wanted them to be going and saving the world as first level characters. So so I sort of avoided a lot of the, you know, you're fighting a bunch of kobolds or anything like that. Instead, I've been taking higher level monsters and been scaling them down so the players can take them on. So I took an 11th level ghost and made it a challenge for first levels, but not impossible. And actually, the two damage outputs ended up taking it down a lot faster than I was expecting. And they're sort of tied into this big, huge overall plot. There's a stone that can kill gods, and it's been stolen, and they're going after it. And they don't know who it is that's stolen it. And so they're in the Nentir Vale, and who knows? It could be anywhere at this point. So they're sort of trying to track it down. They ended up going into Hammerfast and discovering that there was a Temple of Iun that had a bunch of prophecies relating to the previous heroes who had previously recovered the Godfell Stone. And so I allowed them to go in there and roll randomly on a bunch of tables to see what terrible things they end up discovering inside the library. But each time they willingly rolled on the table, they would receive a piece of the prophecy. The day before, I did not know what any of the prophecies were. I actually went online and did a search on prophecies from the Oracle at Delphi, which is an actual prophet in ancient Greece. Mm-hmm. If you've seen 300, the girl dancing around in underwater is the Oracle. And that it was pretty close to what it actually was. The girls were young virgins who were drugged out of their minds, and then they would sort of sit there and whisper bits of random gibberish that people would end up interpreting as prophecy. And throughout the stories of ancient Greece, they were constantly correct in what they had said. So I took those different prophecies and I converted them into relating to things that were happening in my story, or things that I had planned. And in fact, some of the prophecies, I looked at them and said, that sounds really cool. I don't have any plans for something in my game that's anything like that, but I've now fit things into my game that match with the prophecy. So some of the things, I know exactly what they mean. Some of the things, I have no idea. And if something happens to sound very much like one of the prophecies, then I'll just sort of go with that. For example, actually right after they ended up getting the prophecies, they began immediately dissecting them and trying to figure out what they all meant. The one that they ended up clinging onto and deciding to pursue first, they're in Hammerfast, which is somewhat near the Harkonwald, which is down to the south of the Nentir Vale. And one of the players got... I took little strips of paper that had the prophecies on them and was handing them out as each time the people rolled. And so the first one that they ended up going with was, "Tell the king the fair wrought house has fallen. No shelter has the Harkonwald, nor sacred laurel leaves. The fountains are now silent. The voice is stilled. It is finished." So they knew that something bad was going down in Harkonwald. I had told them that the prophecies they were discovering, they were sort of led to them, which allowed them to get the exact prophecies that would relate to their characters. So it's not just a random prophecy that's relating to Harkonwald. It specifically has to do with their task of finding out about the Godfell Stone. And the interesting thing is that with prophecy, whatever the players say that they think the prophecy means, you can just go with that. It's, yeah, that's right. That's exactly what I meant when I put that there. So I had planned on some bad... I plan on stuff going on in Harkonwald, but if they never picked up on that, then they would never have to visit Harkonwald. But now that they are, I plan on actually running the Reavers of Harkonwald and having the thief have gone through the Harkonwald on their way to their ultimate goal. They also began to interpret some of the things completely different from how I had planned the explanation to be, and I still plan on using my original explanation. So that allows the players to realize they've misinterpreted things, especially if they decide to really pursue something really heavily that does not mean what I meant it to mean, and then discover they're wrong, because then that's going to cause them to rethink everything that they previously figured out based on the prophecies.
Part of what makes prophecies or time travel stories or whatever, because that's, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, right?
Oh, yeah.
Part of what makes them extra awesome in that moment is if you were close, but wrong in interesting ways, you know?
Yes.
So if they, you know, they maybe they latch on to the Harkonwald thing and they've interpreted it and they think it means this certain thing. Mm-hmm. Well, have that certain thing lead them up to be mostly right, but sort of that final sort of revelation actually is a different spin on it than expected, right?
Yeah.
I did this a little bit in the Paragon tier. Actually, the same character, the Ranger, had a backup character that he wanted to play around with a little bit, which was a Drow. And the idea he had for him was, there's a certain sect of Drow that believe that his other character was a figure in a prophecy that was going to save the Drow, raise them back up, and make them part of Elven society again. And so that this Drow was actually running, his backup character was running around sort of to protect him as a secret bodyguard to make sure this guy survived, because otherwise he can't save everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, yeah, let's do that, let's have that, and that's what the prophecy is. Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. And so these Drow would every now and then sort of show up to sort of egg this whole thing along, and then as it got closer and closer to sort of revealing what was actually going on, and as they moved on it more and more, I turned a 180 on him, and it turned out that the Drow had completely misinterpreted the prophecy to begin with, and it wasn't about them. It was about star elves who got trapped in their own little demiplane during the spell plague, and you know, when it discussed his other character, the Ranger character, as the noble warrior, it wasn't noble because he was, you know, he had a lot of moral character. It was because he was actually distantly descended from the Eladrin / Star Elves that were trapped in this place. And so he, because he was of noble blood, he had the ability to affect the Mythil and help save that city. Huh. So, you know, they thought it was one thing and they pursued it, and that led them to what it actually was. So take what they think it is, use it, but then flip it on them in interesting ways.
Yeah. The another part that one of the things that was widely misinterpreted was they were reading over one of the prophecies that mentions the Haven of Winter. They were in Hammerfest and automatically assumed that I was referring to Hammerfest. But I've had trouble getting my players to pay attention to the little notebooks I made up for them to tell what's going on. And so they weren't even thinking about the fact that there is a city called Winter Haven.
Right.
And I even capitalized Haven and Winter, but they weren't picking up on that. So I'm hoping that they do, because the prophecy states that the city will be sacked by the prince's sons. And if not, then the whole land of Narath will feel the death of the Queen of Ravens. That basically they either the city is going to fall, or the Queen of Ravens is going to be killed. One of those two is going to happen.
And that's another bit of a good bit of advice for prophecies as well, is that it's good to, in some cases it's good to say, you know, this is going to happen, and then blow their minds when you find a way to actually make it happen, right?
Yeah.
But what you've done with this prophecy is you have an either-or prophecy, you know? Mm-hmm. Either the heroes are going to save the day, or this horrible thing is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And in terms of your campaign and your story, it can go either way. And if they want to continue to blindly sort of misinterpret what that means, mm-hmm. that's okay.
Yeah.
Because meanwhile, over there in that other city, suddenly bad things are happening, you know?
Yeah.
And now they have to deal with that.
Exactly. And the great thing is that the two choices they have, neither of them are good. Either the city of Winterhaven is going to be destroyed, or the Raven Queen is going to die. So they have to make that choice if they figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That they can either allow the Raven Queen to die, or Winterhaven gets destroyed. So,
and if the Raven Queen dies, you can tell a zombie apocalypse story.
Exactly.
Now nobody dies.
Exactly. So I'm really looking forward to seeing if they end up interpreting it. I haven't set a timeline on all this stuff, so I can allow it to drag out. I can have reports of the prince's sons are the, I mentioned in my little booklet, I had all the gods who are currently alive, all the gods who are dead, because dead gods are an important part of a campaign that has a stone that can kill gods. And then they were the non-gods, the sort of those who were attaining godhood. So I had things like Kaz the Destroyer, and also the demon prince of undeath, Orcus.
Mm-hmm.
So by mentioning the prince's sons and highlighting prince, I'm hoping that they are then able to pick up on that as well. And luckily, here's a really good tip for prophecy. If your players really aren't figuring it out, if you have somebody at the table that is, it's always good to have a DM's leak, somebody who you are able to mention things to that they can then help ease into conversation. Like, I inevitably end up telling my wife pretty much everything that I'm planning for the campaign, and she doesn't end up using it to her advantage, because for her it's just a game. There's no need to try to, you know, push your own being more awesome than everybody else. So if I end up mentioning something to her, like, hey, the Haven of Winter is Winterhaven, she can end up bringing that up as her own thought,
right,
in conversation,
which is realistic for her character to think anyway, right? I mean,
exactly.
Anybody from the Nintyr Vale, if they saw the Haven of Winter, probably would think of Winterhaven.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in fairness, even if you don't have a DM leak, that's probably something the DM could just remind them, since they clearly didn't read the background.
You know? Or also simply throwing in, hey, roll an insight check.
Yeah. Or give me a history, you know?
Yeah. So my current plan is that the players are going to end up, as the campaign goes along, certain things in the prophecies will end up make the players realize what's going on. Some things are very specific and some are more vague. For example, the simple prophecy of to touch the light is death, the shadow will light the true way. I'm not sure what that means, but it could be as simple as a light trap in one of the dungeons.
Right. I was gonna say that could be one room in a dungeon.
Exactly. And what I will probably end up doing is, once they've accomplished something that fulfills the prophecy or is related to the prophecy, because they've sort of realized that they're being watched by higher powers, perhaps have that prophecy sort of whispered in their ear.
Sure.
You know,
although at the same time, going back to the idea of sometimes it's fun to turn things around in unexpected ways, right? The PCs may see to touch the light as death, the shadow will light the true way, might make them think, oh, well, this will help me get through that dungeon, and maybe even include that little thing in the dungeon at some point to make them think, okay, well, that one's done, check it off the list. But then it'd be awesome to bring it back as, no, this was actually a major story element, you know? And it's like, oh, we got to go back to that whole thing all over again because now they're not expecting it.
Yeah, that's true. They think it's done, and we don't need to worry about that anymore. Tear up the piece of paper. And
right. But it turns out that was really the key piece for understanding everything else or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, my plan is to sort of go through all the different prophecy and eventually end up at the final big, huge reveal. And I actually have, if the players are able to interpret it all correctly, I actually have the overall plot of the entire campaign hidden away in those prophecies. And additionally, as they go along the way, I may introduce new prophecies that they end up discovering that sort of complete the story. So do you have any other advice on what you should do with prophecy in your game?
I think we've hit a lot of different things, right? We talked about having either ors. So, we talked about taking things and turning them around in unexpected ways. But at the same time, listen to the interpretations of your players and use that.
Mm-hmm. Because then the players feel really, really smart. They think that they've figured out what you were planning all along. Mm-hmm. When really you're just playing off of what they've said.
Right. Yep. I think that's good. And I think it's. And people should go to DiceMonkey.net and see this big, long list of prophecies you've got. I mean, you've highlighted a few of them, but there's a lot there. And there's some really cool ideas that people, I think, could get some ideas for.
And feel free to steal them because, like I said, I've stolen a lot of those from the prophecy at Delphi. There's one that's stolen from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Two more were suggested by some people on Twitter. And the rest is all Oracle stuff. And I think I pretty much used all the prophecies I was able to find from the Oracle. So you're more than welcome to go out, you know, and look and see if you can find any more. But most of those are right there for you to use and ready to go, and just change the names of some locations and things like that, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think don't be afraid to throw in little prophecies here and there too. You know, it doesn't all have to be you go into a room and get just, you know, a big giant page of prophecies, you know, like you've got here, or like I did when they hit Epic Tier or whatever. I've also incorporated a lot of little, you know, in the night this character is visited by somebody and told you need to protect him, and then they're gone. You know, that's a form of prophecy too. You know, because that character has no idea who him is. He's like, I'm supposed to protect somebody. I don't know who. What's going on? What's going to happen? You know,
what am I doing?
Right. Which is actually me envisioning the final scene of the entire campaign at level 30, but we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, I think that's some good advice and good examples of how to do it.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and move into the final part of the podcast, where normally we would have an advice topic for how to improve your campaign and things like that. But since we don't have any comments or anything, let's go ahead and talk about what we're currently doing. I've talked a little bit about what's going on with the Godfell Stone campaign, but I'll go ahead and give more details after you tell me what you're involved in right now.
Sure. Well, I'm a teacher, and we've just gone back to school for the year a couple weeks back. And along with that, I'm also writing – there's new standards. So I'm writing new curriculum for the entire district, and so I'm swamped. I'm busy. All my free time is busy doing work stuff I'm getting paid for. So I don't have a ton of time for running a game right now, especially an Epic Tier game, which is where my characters are at. So I have one of my players has been asking for an opportunity to do sort of a little mini campaign next time I need a break. And I said, well, this is the perfect time. So he's running his little mini Dark Sun campaign while I take a break from DMing. And so we're doing it. It's kind of a 1 through 30, but we're skipping big swaths of levels. So what we do is, you know, he did chapter 1 at level 1. And then chapter 2 was at level 5. And then chapter 3 we're going into next, which is level 11. So we're basically getting, you know, we're getting a cross-section of our characters through time. And then each time we go through a new chapter, you know, a year has gone by or whatever. And so that's what we're doing. I've been writing about my experiences as a player in this campaign over at temporaryhitpoints.com. In fact, I was just working on an article about how my character is leaving the group, as they go into 11th level. I opted to embrace the world when I found out we were doing Dark Sun. And Dark Sun's not a nice place, and so he's not a very nice guy. And so the idea was he's a Templar, right? He's working for the bad guys.
Yeah.
And he sort of sees the rest of the party as his slaves, right? Or certainly his inferiors, right? Because he's very self-important, and he's a warlord, so he's the leader. So the idea is, look, you're going to do what I say, or there's going to be trouble, right? And oddly enough, being a warlord, people tend to do what he says, you know, because it's like, you know, I use this power that gives you bonuses to damage if you attack that guy. That's my way of saying, see, he's ordering you to attack that guy. And lo and behold, everybody wants to do the extra damage, so they all do what he says.
Yeah.
And it's actually worked out really well. But at the end of our heroic tier chapter, at the end of chapter two, we played through one of the old, a highly modified version of the old, one of the old Dark Sun adventures, where in the end you kill King Kallak. Who's trying to become a dragon and was the Sorcerer King of Tyr. Mm-hmm. And so at the end, we killed King Kallak. And Tithian, the guy who we've been working for, has come in and replaced the king. He's the new king of Tyr and has taken all the credit for it and basically said to my character, you are going to continue working for me. You've proven yourself useful. Get rid of all these people who know way too much. Which my character interpreted as, you guys got to go. And apparently, I read in my DM's blog that apparently what he actually meant was I was supposed to kill them all, but I didn't. So I basically exiled them out into the desert. And so my character has now become the NPC that is working for the bad guy.
Oh, excellent.
And the rest of the party is out there now deciding that maybe we ought to be saving the world instead of working for the bad guys. And yeah. I'll bring in my new character to sort of play into that. And he's going to be a bard, which plays into Dark Sun pretty heavily story-wise, because anytime you're an arcane magic user, it's a big deal in Dark Sun because you're not supposed to be there.
Mm. Excellent.
So that's where I'm at.
Cool. I'm currently working on the Godfell Stone. It was a campaign concept that I came up with where basically there was a stone created back during the Dawn War that simply touching it to a god would kill him. So the gods were finally able to figure out a way to get it away from the primordials, and they ended up hiding it away. It was found thousands of years ago and was about to be used to kill the gods, and when a bunch of heroes showed up and stopped them, and they took the stone for themselves. And now it's been years and years, and the stone has been sitting in a monastery for a couple hundred years, and one day it just vanished from the monastery. So the heroes show up and they've got to figure out who took the Godfell Stone, how they're planning on using it, and get it away from them. And so there's a lot of political stuff involved with the different factions. Different gods want it. I'm going to begin heavily hinting that it's possible it might have been Orcus who stole it, because he's really been wanting to kill off the Raven Queen for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to really, really heavily emphasize that, hoping that the players will lean that way, but then discover that he wants the stone, sure, but he doesn't have it. Lots of different things like that. The last session that involved all the prophecy, there was no combat in the entire session, and it was most of these guys' third time playing D&D ever, actually any role-playing game ever. Mm-hmm. And they were amazed they were able to play an entire session without any combat, really, really enjoyed it. So eventually they're going to end up finding themselves in the Astral Sea and then traveling between all the different planes, trying to sort of track down where this stone is, who has it, and eventually end up stopping him. But I'm planning on doing all of that in the heroic tier. Like I said earlier, I wanted to see how epic you could get things while still remaining low level, because the sweet spot for 4th edition really is the heroic tier. It's much easier to run games that way, from what I've experienced.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. I like Paragon still.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paragon's my sweet spot.
I just find the combat taking far too long, and I'd rather knock out a quick combat in 45 minutes and move on with the rest of the story, especially since our group only has about 2 hours to play each week. Sure. So we've got a really, really short time to sort of try to get through as much as possible. So in general, I try to keep my combats simple but dynamic. And so, yeah, that's my current plan. And the players are really enjoying themselves. I've had a couple of guys who in the previous sessions, I wanted to just turn to them and go, you know, you don't really have to be here if you don't want, because it just didn't seem like they it didn't seem like they were really enjoying it. They're my coworkers, and I thought maybe they're just showing up, continuing to show up because it's only a couple hours once a week, and it's, you know, they're doing it to be nice. But after the last session, they were all really, really psyched about it, and the next day at work, we're all talking about it, and they're really enjoying it. And I've got hand-painted miniatures for everybody. I just recently went to the dollar store and picked up a bunch of horses that are the right scale and glued those onto stands and stuff. So, because they just recently stole a bunch of horses. So, so they're going to be using those, and they were all really excited to have nabbed a bunch of horses. So they're new players, and they're really, really enjoying themselves. So
sweet.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good game.
Yeah. We've been enjoying it. So that's about all for this episode.
Now in the future, you wanted to have people contact you.
Yes.
For this last segment, where you could give them advice for their campaign and what have you. And you're going to use the Tomes Biz line as a voicemail option.
Mm-hmm. So you can call in, just, you know, call in your cell phone. And for that, it's 919-BIZTOME, BizTome. That's 919-BIZTOME. And you can call and you can leave a voicemail, and you could be featured here on the show asking your questions. I'd like to really talk about if you're having trouble with your campaign, or if you need advice on some ideas on what to do with your campaign, just let me know. And me and whoever it is that the guest host is going to be will be able to answer all those questions for you.
Right on. And then people could also leave a comment on the site? Is that how you want to go?
They can leave comments on the site, which will be over on the Tome Show's site, which is, what's the address?
Tomeshow.com.
Tomeshow.com. Mm-hmm. And they can also, if they want, I'll probably end up posting this up over on dicemonkey.net as well. So you can leave comments there. And you can contact me on Twitter at Mark Meredith, MarkMeredith. They can also contact you, Jeff, over on Twitter at Squatch, which is, how do you spell that?
SQUACH.
All right. And then they can also go and check out your blogs over at the Temporary Hit Points.
Temporary Hit Points, yeah. I'm pretty hard to find.
Yeah. And then also at, we're also at D&D and Dads when we end up posting.
When we post.
Yeah, I think it's been about 3 or 4 weeks since I think anything has been posted, so.
It's been a while, I tend to go through, I'm at that time of year when I start lacking time to do a lot of my little geeky projects. Mm-hmm. And then November comes, and I do How Not to Grow a Beemo. I don't know if you're familiar with How Not to Grow a Beard Month, right?
Yeah.
And I force myself to post to that site every single day. Mm-hmm. And that gets me back in the habit. So when December comes, I'm suddenly back in the habit of posting something somewhere every day.
Yeah.
So I go through a couple of months every year where my posting and my activity sort of slows down here in the fall. And then November comes, and then it shoots right back up.
Yeah. I found that if I'm not in the middle of playing a game, that I end up just really not having any motivation to post. Even if I think of other topics, I'm like, it's not really worth my time. But when I'm in the middle of playing in a campaign, then I try to actually get posts up every single day over on Dice Monkey, and then when I have time over on other blogs. But I'm the type of person who really ends up adding more and more projects to themselves without really being able to, this podcast being one of them. Uh-huh. I'm always adding more and more projects that I'm working on. My wife rolls her eyes whenever I tell her I've got a new project I'm doing.
I've got about 3 or 4 I've got probably 1 or 2 that I've actually started on and haven't finished quite yet, or haven't launched quite yet. And I've always got 2 or 3 sort of in my head of, man, I really want to do this thing.
Yeah.
But I know I don't have time for it right now.
Exactly.
I have all the other things I haven't finished yet. So I understand that completely.
I have an entire Imperial Guard Warhammer 40K army that is sitting on its sprue unpainted.
Oh, man.
And I need to get that put together. So there's all kinds of products that I'm always working on. But
I hear you.
So I'm really excited to see the responses to this podcast and see how people like it. And
being monthly should give you plenty of time to sort of keep up with it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the plan. And I'm not sure who the next host will be. But I'll be looking around for hosts on Twitter and on the blogs.
It could be you.
It could be you. You could be the next host.
Come on, get all radio with it. It could
exactly.
be you.
So I look forward to seeing the comments. So have a good day.
Thanks for having me.